Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Salt has long been a valuable resource for tribes for preserving and flavoring food. Some tribes also use it in ceremonies. Harvesting methods vary depending on the region, whether it's processing salt from lakes, seawater, or underground deposits. We'll hear about salt traditions, modern uses and techniques, and tribes' connections to this naturally available mineral. That's all coming up right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. Friends and family held a vigil over the weekend for an Omaha Nation woman who died in June while under COVID-19 quarantine on tribal land. Lanice Blackbird's family says they found her body near the cabin on the Omaha Reservation in Nebraska, where she isolated herself after testing positive for the coronavirus. Her family faults tribal officials for not responding to pleas to check on her when she stopped answering her phone. Omaha Nation law enforcement is working with the FBI investigating Blackbird's death. A lawsuit against the Ontario Provincial Police alleges officers falsified their notes to justify a confrontation with two First Nations men that turned violent. The CBC reports the lawsuit claims one of the men was thrown to the ground, punched, and repeatedly tasered in an incident more than 2 years ago. The men claim the actions by the officers were racially motivated. Charges included assaulting a police officer and resisting arrest, two counts of being intoxicated in a public place, and having open liquor. All charges were eventually dropped. The incident was captured on cell phone video. The lawsuit says the officers changed the official notes, saying the men were confrontational and were fighting with the officers. The U.S. House of Representatives passed an amendment that would add protections to an area around Chaco Canyon in New Mexico. The amendment places a one-year moratorium on oil and gas drilling on land near the Chaco Canyon National Historical Park. The amendment must also pass the Senate and President before being enacted. In a written statement, Representative Ben Ray Lujan, the New Mexico Democrat who introduced the amendment, said he was pleased to support the moratorium for the site considered sacred to the area's pueblos and other tribes, and said he hopes to continue working for permanent protections. Other Democratic congressional leaders in both houses also praised the action to move the amendment forward. The chairman of the Kiowa tribe is facing impeachment on several charges, including allegedly mishandling federal coronavirus relief funds. The Gaylord News reports the tribe's seven-member legislative branch will hold a public hearing this week on impeaching Chairman Matthew Camalty at the tribe's headquarters in Carnegie, Oklahoma. Tribal officials also say he wrongfully terminated several gaming employees. Camalty is also facing a recall election organized in June and was the subject of previous impeachment discussions since he was elected in 2017. All seven of the tribe's legislative members must vote in favor of impeachment in order for Camalty to be removed from office. After a continuation of a weekend lockdown and nightly curfews, the Navajo Nation reports 69 new cases of COVID-19, but no new deaths in their latest public health release. President Jonathan Nez says tribal health officials remain cautious, but the nation could lift some restrictions beginning this week. He said opening up will depend on whether new cases stay below 50 a day for 14 days. A little over 430 Navajo citizens total have died from the disease. The Squamish tribe in Washington says it is preparing a lawsuit against King County over sewage spills over the last 2 years. Seattle Times reports the tribe sent a letter expressing its intent to sue for the county's violation of the Federal Clean Water Act. The action comes after repeated spills totaling more than 6 million gallons of sewage. There's no word yet on whether First Lady Melania Trump will visit the Cherokee Nation's headquarters in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. She mentioned last week she is interested in taking the Cherokee Nation up on an invitation to meet with tribal leaders when it is safe and suitable. Her comments came after a meeting by the President's Task Force on Protecting Children in the Indian Health Service System to present their findings to the Trump administration. Tulsa's News on 6 reports Melania Trump is interested in touring the Cherokee Nation's health center and medical school, which is under construction. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP Teletown Halls, bringing you expertise and the latest information on the coronavirus pandemic from leading experts. Info on the latest schedule at 855-274-9507.
Support by the Internet Society. Tribes have until August 3rd to apply for a license to help bring the Internet to their communities. More info available by calling Mark at 1-800-311-2166 or visit internetsociety.org/tribal.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Salt has a special place in traditional Native food and culture. It's harvested from dry lake beds, small pools, and beaches, and it helps preserve food. It's also used to flavor it. And for certain indigenous groups, it is a part of traditional medicine and ceremony. As with many important parts of Native culture, salt knowledge and where it's found is sometimes threatened. In Zuni, the tribe's sacred salt lake in New Mexico was threatened by a coal mine proposal. The tribe was ultimately successful in protecting the lake and the place they've gathered salt since time immemorial. In Hawaii, the families who currently harvest salt from natural salt pads are trying to protect them from encroachment and development. And we'll hear a whole lot about that today. And we want to hear from you, too. Do you harvest salt in your Native community? Do you have access to traditional salt sources? Give us a call. Share your story. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And today, joining us from Hanapepe in Hawaii is Kule Naisau Santos, and she is the Vice President of Protect Pa'akai, and she is Kanaka Maoli. Our pleasure to have her here. Kule, welcome.
Good morning.
And Kule, let's start, you know, where is salt found there in Hawaii?
So we make Hawaiian salt in Hanapepe on the island of Kauai. It's passed down from generation to generation. It is not sold. We don't sell any of our salt that we make. We only do it during the summer months, and it all depends on the weather. So this year, we started, but then it rained all night last night because we almost got a hurricane last night. So now it's underwater. So we probably won't be able to get any salt this year.
And so, Kule, what are the cultural connections? What were you taught? How is this a part of culture?
So my father has been making salt in the exact same place his mother was making salt. I've been making salt since I was a little child. My kids have been making salt in the exact same spot. We use the same methods and tools that my father used when he was a little kid. I'm 45. My dad's close to 80. So we've been in the exact same spot making Hawaiian salt, not for profit.
And so understanding that this may be the year without salt, what does that change?
Nothing really. I mean, we just try to save up from the years that we are able to harvest and hopefully not give away too much so that we have for our own household for the years that we don't make Hawaiian salt. It's the only salt that we use in our home. So,
And what does it taste like?
It's more on the flakish side, the salt, and it's big salt crystals. It is salty sweet. We have this brine shrimp that lives in our well. Salt water travels underground from the ocean into our wells. Wells are about 10 feet deep, 4 feet wide. And then we take the water from the wells and we move them into these beds made out of clay, this really rich clay that we dig up in the area. So we kind of make a big clay pot. And that's how we, and so the, when we put the water from the well into the beds, it forms salt crystals. And falls, grows heavy and then falls to the bottom and creates different layers.
And so about how long does this process take?
Oh, a good season. It all depends on the weather. We have to have a hot season, salty water, a lot of brine shrimp, because the brine shrimp cleans our wells and lets us know that the water is salty. So from when we create beds, every year we have to go in and redo all our beds. And then from there, it can take about 4 weeks for our first harvest. In a harvest, our family, we have about 21 beds and two wells. Our family is probably about 50 of us, 40 to 50 of us. That includes children. And we harvest maybe about 85-gallon buckets per harvest. And in a good season, we'll get 3 to 4 harvests.
And so about how big are the beds?
The beds are probably 10 feet long, not really a foot deep, maybe a little less than, maybe about 10 inches, 10 to 12 inches, and then 4 feet wide. So it looks like a bed, like a twin-size bed, and it's in the ground. And we use the method, we take this black clay and we bind it into the ground, and we take a rough rock first and we do the circle method and bind the clay together. So we're on our hands and our knees, takes about, 3 to 4 hours to just get that first layer of clay down. Then we let the sun heat it. Then we come back with a smooth rock and we smooth it all out. So it's almost like creating this clay pot, and then we let the sun bake it again. If there's cracks, then we redo, because we don't want the water to seep out. If it's good, then we do the water. And then from there, we come and refill the water every 2 to 3 days. We also clean our well every season. So we bucket out all the water, and then we jump into the actual well, and we scrape out all the sides to help clean the pores and allow some saltier water to come in. And then from there, harvest. Oh, I'm sorry. What was that?
No, go ahead and finish.
So on harvest, what we do is we harvest by layer. So we take the top layer, which is the whitest layer, first, and that's what we kind of use for in our homes, like a table of salt. Then we have the middle layer, which is a little bit more pinkish, and that's kind of what we use to give away to others. And then we have our bottom layer, which is a little bit more brown, and that's what we use for people to give away for ceremonies, fishermen to line their coolers when they fish to help preserve the salt, things of that nature.
And so, Kule, how does it get its colors?
It's just from the elements around us. So a lot of people take, back in the day, and there's 21 original families that have a salt bed in this area. So some of the families, we will actually harvest this dirt that's called alai. It's the vein of the mountain. And so we take that, and people will shave it into their salt, and it will give us this really rich, red, pretty color. That is what some people use, and they like the minerals that it hold, and that's why they do it. I personally don't do it, so it's just a matter of, just because we are in red dirt country, we're surrounded by red dirt, the salt patches, so it's really hard to keep that white, really pure color. So it's just the elements that give it hints of different colors.
Mm-hmm. And I remember that red dirt of Kauai, and just thinking how much it reminded me of places here in the Southwest. And so, Kule, the way that your family harvests, is this the way Kanaka Maoli have always harvested salt there?
Yes, and there's legends on how it came to be, how this one area came to be. This is the only place in the world that makes Hawaiian salt. We're the only place in Hawaii that makes Hawaiian salt. To get true, authentic Hawaiian salt, this is the only place that you can get it. The things that you find in the store that's labeled Hawaiian salt is made in Arizona and packaged up and put Hawaiian salt on it. So it's, but we definitely use the same methods that my grandmother used.
And so speaking of that salt that is labeled Hawaiian salt, but you say is made in Arizona, by what means do they call it Hawaiian salt? Just because of the color, the method? Do you know?
So what they do is they buy bulk. They send it to Hawaii and they mix it with some coloring or they mix it with some different kinds of seasoning and they package that up and they call it Hawaiian salt. And if you notice, it's more of a rock form of salt, where our salt is not rock. It's like a snowflake. They all look like snowflakes. That's what Hawaiian salt looks like, a snowflake.
And so what do you think of that? What do you think of this type of appropriation?
You know, my father's, so the way my father was raised was to, this is what he was raised to do, to go into the salt beds, practice his culture and give it away and to not bother with anyone. His generation was if you don't bother with anyone and you just do your work, no one will bother you and no one will, and you just don't talk about what you do. And when people ask, you just give, and that's what you're supposed to do. With that being said, there's a lot of these things that have happened that have made it difficult for them to produce what they used to produce, for that area to stay protected. So there's a lot of battling that goes around. And because of that, things like this happen because they didn't want to voice their concerns. They just wanted to work and continue to do their culture.
And I want to get further into that about places and places being threatened, especially areas where salt exists naturally and salt is a part of our understanding of how to relate to our environments. And there is a little bit about Hawaii and salt and how the indigenous people there connect with it. How closely does it relate to your tribe's story, your own story as an indigenous person? Anything you want to share, go ahead and dial in. We are talking about salt. How do you say it in your language? And what are the stories that go along with it? And when you hear that word in your native language, bahli for me, what does it wake up inside of you? Go ahead and give us a call. Share your thoughts. And if you just want to say salt in your language, we'll take the language lesson. Dial in now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we look forward to your calls. And if you'd like to ask anything of Kule, call in now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to hearing from you today.
The Trump administration's long-awaited environmental analysis of a proposed mine in the Bristol Bay area of Alaska is out. It clears the way for the Pebble Mine near significant salmon habitat. Some area tribes welcome job opportunities. Others say it poses a major environmental threat. We'll get deeper into this on the next Native America Calling.
Support by AARP. Being connected is important, now more than ever. You don't have to face this difficult time alone. AARP Friendly Voice makes it easy to stay in touch with others in your community. If you're feeling alone or know someone who is, you can use the AARP Friendly Voice program to ask for a phone call from an AARP volunteer Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can learn more by calling 888-281-0145.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are talking about salt today. And we know many tribes harvested salt from lakes and pools. And so today we ask, is salt harvesting something that still is practiced in your community? You can tell us about it. Do you keep natural salt in your cupboard for different reasons, maybe even to practice your culture? You can tell us about it. Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us today from the island of Kauai in Hanapepe in Hawaii is Kule Naiso Santos. She's the vice president of Protect Pa'akai, and she is Kanaka Maoli. Our pleasure to have her here. Kule, thank you for being here. And let's talk about threats to areas that are important to you, especially to harvest salt. What are some of those threats and what has been done?
So we are the lowest in the area that we create Hawaiian salt. We are the lowest area, and we are surrounded by every entity. So we have a county park on one side of us. We have the state Department of Transportation, who they have a helicopter company that has no respect for our culture whatsoever. And then we have people, and then we have plantation. And so everything bad that they do flows to us and to our area. So people, for example, people will come and they'll party in our parking lot area because we're right by the beach. We're about 100 yards from the ocean shoreline. So people will come in, they'll party in our parking lot, and they'll break their glass. There's never a year that someone doesn't get cut with a broken glass bottle in our salt patches. We have the helicopter company, biggest helicopter company in the United States, who refuses to follow any rules because it's not a helicopter airport that's monitored or has any rules or guidelines. So they will fly over us when they're not supposed to. They will come and bring their helicopter on our side and just run their helicopter and cause all kinds of dirt and debris. We have homeless people that sometimes will set up camp right in our salt patch. We have a lot of that kind of stuff that happens on a constant.
And what are some of the things your family or your community is doing to try and change things or hold people accountable?
Oh, it's really hard. You know, it's everyone in Hawaii. You can't be a person from Hawaii and not have tasted Hawaiian salt. You cannot go to a party or a graduation or a baby's first birthday or a luau without having had Hawaiian salt. Everyone will come and ask you for Hawaiian salt, but to get everybody to stand and help protect it is another thing. And I think it's hard. Back in the day, my father used to give out, if someone came knocking on the door, he would give out a 5-gallon bucket. We can't do that anymore. I kind of say, well, are you salt worthy? And if so, I'll give out little sandwich bags. Because I say salt worthy as, okay, well, the last time that I stood on the front line and had to battle an issue, did you stand next to me? Did you turn in your letter of support? Did you, do the things to help protect the area? And that's when I say, well, are you salt worthy? My father still gives to everybody and anybody, but I'm a little bit more particular on who I give to now.
And Kule, what's your father's name? Maybe there are folks in listening audience who have had a conversation with him.
Frank Santos.
And so just understanding everything that goes with this, and when you are able to have a good harvest and you're sitting at your table with your loved ones or you're at a celebration and you see that salt there, what does that say to you?
So when I was, just to give you a little more history, when I was young, I didn't understand, I didn't get it, what was so important about making Hawaiian salt. And I had my first child at 18. And at that moment, there was never a day where, from that moment on, I never missed making Hawaiian salt. And I made sure my children never missed. I mean, the only way that they could have missed a day is if they were dying. And that's never had to happen. It was a priority because I knew how important our culture is. And this is a part of our culture that's important to continue. As you have to understand, it's the only place in the world that makes Hawaiian salt. I get to stand in the exact same place my grandmother stood to create a product because I love my culture, I love my history, and then to give it away and just give it away. So that's to think back at all the things that really in the world now, it's rare to find something that is done that way.
And I like the way you connect, past generations and standing in that same place. And I know indigenous nations that do harvest salt, that is something that also connects you to ancestors. And even the way you harvest it is a lot of times telling your own tribe's story. Maybe even connected to some of the foundations of your community, your origin stories. Anything you want to share about cultural connections to salt or even how it's harvested, go ahead and share your thoughts today. Share your story. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Kule, we're going to bring in another guest to talk about salt as well. We're going to go to Augusta, Georgia. We have Dave Smoke McCluskey. He is a nomadic chef, and he is Mohawk. Our pleasure to have him here. Dave, welcome to Native America Calling.
Well, thanks for having me.
And Dave, just hearing the beauty of the way salt is harvested in Hawaii, what other ways do you connect to harvesting salt or even just relying on it in the things that you do and prepare?
I grew up on Cape Cod, so salt making there is kind of something that they teach us in our youth, if you will. We're constantly around salt and salt water, obviously. But as a chef, obviously, it's one of our most important ingredients. So you kind of, after a while, you start to learn about the different salts that are out there. So I've cooked with the Hawaiian salts, which I probably now recognize as being from Arizona. But there's other places around that process their own salt that are pretty famous. Some of them being in France and things like that, but also here in the Americas. So, pretty ubiquitous. I'm from the Northeast, so there's salt deposits running all through upstate New York, all the way over into Michigan. So. That meant that there were either brine spots or places where salt could be dug from, as well as from the brine lakes or springs where they could be gathered and evaporated for the most part in salt pans. So that would be shallow pots that were semi-buried into the ground and were constantly filled with these wet brine solutions, and evaporation was allowed to go on. So... big trade item for us in the Southeast, as well here. Many areas that had salt springs, if you will. So you've got a tradition here that's obviously long gone since the ethnic cleansing of the Trail of Tears. So a lot of places here kind of forgotten that that's where the salt was gathered, and it was used for trade. Cumberland Gap, just near the Cumberland Gap, which is a pretty famous trade route, if you will. There's a big salt gathering area where salt used to be processed there. So lots and lots of trade with the areas that didn't have salt. I think kind of a misnomer is that natives didn't eat a lot of salt, or it wasn't a recognized thing that we needed. But as you look around, there's places where salt was gathered and traded. So the human body can't do without that salt. So I think it's later, possibly in our reservation period, where things like salt were some of the first things pilfered from our supplies, that it got scarcer and scarcer in some of our foods.
And those trade routes are really important too. And maybe your tribe doesn't harvest, but you have stories of how things were traded for it. You want to share some with us? Go ahead and dial in 1-800-996-2848. Dave, we got a caller. We're going to say hi to Addie, who is in Taos, Pueblo, New Mexico, tuned in online. Addie, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Hi. I just want to say thank you for having this show. This is I'm really interested in hearing more about how other tribes and people are using traditional salts, how they're mining and where they're mining. And I just the last person that you interviewed, I'm sorry, I called in a little bit late. I didn't get to hear everything. But hearing about the trade routes and how salt, has been used, traditional salt has been used for trade is extremely interesting. And I know that our tribe, my tribe from Taos Pueblo, has been doing this for years. We've been working with our Hopi brothers and sisters for a long time, and trading with them, and also going to mine and work with them to process the salt and bring it back for our traditional uses at Taos Pueblo.
And do you know how to say it in your language, Addie?
I do. It's going to take me a minute. It's been I'm not fluent in my language.
Oh, no worries. I'm just curious. Not putting you on the spot, but if you did, because I'm real curious, and I know other tribes, when we do programs like this and you get to hear how it's said in another language, it's always interesting. And then when there are relationships, it's even more. Anything you want to share, call us right now. Don't wait till the end. Now's the perfect time to call in. 1-800-996-2848. Addie, anything else you want to share?
Yeah, I you know, recently my son accompanied a guest that you'll be having on the show, and that was why I was also calling in, was Moise Gonzalez. He's a friend of mine, and he has traditional, he's Henasaro, and he, you know, goes and gathers salt every year, and he goes on this pilgrimage, is what he calls it. And I thought it was really cool. And I know within my family, my father used to go, and we had family members that used to go, you know, a long time ago, back in the 70s, and it's been a long time. So this was kind of a really great opportunity for my son to learn, to know, you know, where to get it, to learn how to harvest it and mine it, harvest it, process it, and gift to his kiva. And so that's what my son did. He's 15, and he accompanied Moise and a couple of other gentlemen to our Hopi relatives' land, and was able to take part in this. And it was just such an honor and such a wonderful learning opportunity for him to do that and bring that back home. He'll be gifting that soon here, actually. So I'm really proud of him. I'm really happy that this is something that's continuing, a tradition that's continuing within my family, and that we're able to bring it back home and gift to our kivas.
That's very nice. Thank you for sharing that, Addie. Thank you for your call at Taos Pueblo. Go ahead and add to the conversation, too, by calling 1-800-996-2848. We got Gordon on the line in Red Lake, Minnesota, tuned in on KOJB. Gordon, thanks for reaching out. Go ahead. You're on air.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I just wanted to, we had these salt licks back in the swampy areas where we would get the salt to dry our fish and our meat to get it ready for the winter. But also we could go there and hunt the deer when they would come and eat the salt. So it not only served the purpose of saving the food for the winter, it also brought the food to us. So it's in, we say Jiwatag, and that's how you say salt in Ojibwe.
Jiwatagin. Wow. Interesting. Thank you for that, Gordon. Thank you for sharing. And again, 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And Dave, anything you want to share about just the history of salt and how we really rely on it for our food? Anything you want to share?
Yeah, food really isn't just the salt that is the content of the salt that we generally harvest. So we've got vitamins and minerals in there as well, chalked in there. So it gives us some of our unique flavors to salt. A lot of us in the Northeast used salt purely as a condiment, if you will. So it will be post-cooking. So you're adding it as a little bit of flavoring as well. In places where there was a lack of salt, we tended to burn things like bean shells and things like that that have a high salt content to them. So I think that's sometimes how you wind up with ash as a culinary flavoring in certain areas, because maybe there's not a lot of salt around. But it's interesting. I've made salt in stainless steel pots and whatnot as a cook growing up on the coast. You just kind of get curious when it's slow. And I've seen things as they've evaporated outside as well. A friend of mine owns a salt works in South Carolina here, and she does an interesting method where they do it on rubber mats, and they do it inside greenhouses, basically. So they reduce that saline solution down to a certain percentage, and they pour it out of the mats and kind of let air do its thing so they can harvest. And we use a lot of that salt here at the house, and we even smoke some of it. So there's a lot of things you can do with salt, you know, just besides seasoning your food. You can cure things. You can obviously, the salt licks as was just spoken of. Here in the South, you see a lot of places that are named lick at the end of them. So It kind of gives you an idea as to what went on in the area, or that there's probably a salt spring there. So all interesting stuff to watch. And not only did some folks use it in dry curing of their meats, but they soak whole hams and whatnot in a brine solution. So down on the coast where I grew up, there's plenty of evidence of folks taking seawater and eating clams and mussels cooked in seawater. So that obviously enhances that medium from just usually, you know, steaming in fresh water. So pretty common stuff that you don't always think about. Salt production and salt use all over the place. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the salt licks were often replenished by folks after they've used the salt for tanning hides or curing things, so as not to let that salt go to waste, that they got dumped back at the salt licks a lot of the time. So, or there were licks formed in the fields and in farmers' fields a lot of the time for their cows and whatnot. People saving that commodity as well and not letting it go to waste by just throwing it in the trash heap. So I think salt is so ubiquitous now that we've all kind of forgotten as to how important it is in everything. So it's neat to see some of the revival of people making salt again, or that there's still people making it as they have for generations.
And, you know, this reminder or this waking up of knowledge is really something to celebrate. And I appreciate everybody who has joined us in this circle today to share a little bit of how they connect to it, how their tribe connects to it, how their indigenous nation does, and even some of the practices on how it is gathered. And maybe you have a part of that story. Go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. These phone lines, while they're live and they're open, give us a ring.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Thanks for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and today we are focusing on salt. Do you harvest salt naturally? Do you make it? And how important is it to your Native community? There's still time to join our conversation. Go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. With us today out of Augusta, Georgia, is Dave Smokey McCleskey. He is a nomadic chef, and he is Mohawk. Anything you want to ask him, go ahead and dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Kule Naisoa Santos is with us, too. She is the Vice President of Protect Pa'akai. She is Kanaka Maoli. Our pleasure to have her here. And, of course, if you have anything you'd like to share with her, you can call in, too. 1-800-996-2848. And right now, we're going to go to Carnuel, New Mexico. We have Moises Gonzalez on the line with us. He is an associate professor in community and regional planning at the University of New Mexico. And he is Henisaro. Our pleasure to have him here. Moises, welcome.
Good morning. I'm Arawaka. My name is Moises. Good to be here.
And Moises, tell us a little bit about your relationship with salt.
So I think, being Henisaro, I'm a Henisaro mixed Comanche Apache that were, you know, captive kids that were placed in that community in the buffer zone between in the 18th century. So the way I learned about salt was when I went to the salt beds, which are out kind of by where the historic pueblos, the Tompito and Pito pueblos of Quarai. And so I would, my grandpa took me there and showed me how to get salt just so he would know, so I would know how hard it was to gather salt. And he would tell me how important salt was gathered in those, and it's the place we gather salt is an old, it's a dry salt bed, but it's kind of a living system where you have water coming in, seeping through this basin. And then, of course, we're in the southwestern desert where it gets hot and then the evaporation. So it's almost like a living being, which is interesting when you learn about this place, how it lives and it breathes in it, and almost has lungs to it, right? And so the stories I heard is my grandpa told stories about his grandpa that they would come and salt, get the salt. And then what they would do with it is they would go, the men would leave in October and go hunt the buffalo till December. And in that time frame, they would take the salt, like to tan the buffalo hides, to cure the meat. And then on the way back, they would meet the Comanche around what was called Palo Verde, which is around present-day Amarillo, Texas. And then there would meet the Comanche, and they would trade the Comanche for salt, for cornmeal and other things. And then, of course, they would bring this is the sad history, right? Back in those days, they used to trade for captives and bring those captives back. But in modern times, my role of getting salt is kind of mentioned is I go get salt. And I gift it to, it's never to be sold. I gift it to folks from my friends from the Pueblos. In the last few years, I've been taking people out there. Some of my friends from the Pueblo is great to take Addie, who called in earlier, her son from Tops Pueblo, out to gather salt. Because if you look at the salt, we're all connected. The salt lakes of this place were the Tompito and Pito people that were erased by the Spanish colonization, and in modernization times, the salt bed's been given to grazing leases. It's under threat because of climate changes, where people used to probably gather salt is because of the amounts of droughts we have. It's getting harder and harder to get unless you really know and you're active participate. So what I've been trying to do is just among some of my friends from various pueblos and from other communities is connect, because, you know, of course, the Tiwa, this is a very important Tiwa gathering place. It was important for the Tanos, the Tewas, the Kiwa. So group after group, you know, Plains Apache, the Jicarilla were dependent on their salt there. The Comanche, the Humanos could come all the way from Texas to gather salt because this place was a very important salt place, gathering place.
Well, thank you for opening up some of that history there. And you know what? I got another call we're going to bring in. There's still time if you want to join us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We have Joyce, who is in Wounded Knee, South Dakota, listening in on KILI. Joyce, thanks for giving us a ring. Go ahead, share your thoughts.
Oh, this is a very interesting topic because meals are best tasting when they're salt. And I was remembering, it made me remember how our grandpa would go up in the Black Hills and gather salt together in sacks that he took. And he would bring it home and pass it out to the family members, their sons and daughters. He would pass it out too, and we were the grandchildren that were able to be recipients of that good tasting salt, because it is not tasting salt as it we taste salt today.
Yeah, it has
and that's
a very
the
distinct
factor.
Taste. Mm-hmm. Well, Joyce, thank you for sharing. Thank you for your call there in Wounded Knee. Again, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. It's how you reach us. And for you, Moises, the ability to share, any thoughts?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, one of the things reflecting on what my grandpa did, you know, that, you know, think about it, you know, he grew up in the early, probably the teens and 20s gathering salt and, you know, I learned about going in there about the 80s. And so, you know, to think about how precious salt is and how we're disconnected, I think for one thing that I think is important about salt in its culinary practices today is that especially in the summertime, you know, when we're doing work and, you know, and outdoor work, it's traditional to eat in the mountain communities to take, it's a local herb that we gather too, and it's called it's a Calcota Indian tea, sometimes called Navajo tea. It's important that people, you know, in the summertime that we add a little bit of the native salt in there, because that's what keeps us hydrated. There gets a point where you can't hydrate yourself with water, and the ways in which, you know, to hold, you know, kind of retain your hydration, just thinking about the summertime and the heat and doing work, you know, just something as simple as putting local salt, native salt into your cuota tea is something that I think it's something important to remember.
All right. Thank you for that. We got another caller. We got Mary in Bethel, Alaska, tuned in on KYUK. Mary, thank you for calling. You're on air.
Thanks.
Hi, Mary. Okay, give us a ring back, Mary. I'm curious what you wanted to add. And so when we talk about the nutrition in native salts or indigenous salts, Dave Smoke McCluskey, a chef, is here with us. And Dave, is there anything more you can expand on about the nutrients that come in these indigenous salts?
Well, as the French say with their wine, they say terroir, which means it's from the ground, if you will. So a lot of our different spots where we gather or we harvest seawater or that brine are affected by the ground that they bubble up from. So like here in the South, I mentioned the Cumberland Gap earlier, but there's that whole part of the Appalachians was at one time was the bottom of an ancient sea. So a lot of that stuff settled, I mean, which is where we get some of our brines from, but there's also hard areas of rock that can be dug, if you will, or mined. So a lot of that is inflected with whatever regionally is there. Like here in Georgia, you might find the orange clay will be kind of part of some of that salt. So again, that's usually a high iron content, so you get a little bit of iron in there to things. So each salt, depending on how it's harvested or where it's harvested from, takes on a little bit of that local area flavor. Sometimes down on the coast, you get algaes and things like that that are naturally occurring in the water and you know, pieces of seaweed and whatnot that all kind of flavor things. So there's just a lot of different salts that taste drastically different than other salts and add a nice flavor to local food or not such a great flavor if the salt isn't very good. In Onondaga, which is basically the capital region with the Haudenosaunee of the Iroquois come from, once we were starting to deal more and more with the colonists, we had our production of salt go up there in Onondaga because there's huge salt mines and there was a salt lake-ish there, a brackish area that salt was able to be produced and that was used for trade. So all of that stuff can be pretty unique, like I said, to the area. So people seek it out as a condiment usually versus just in something that you're curing it. So bulk salts a lot of the time will get used for curing things where everything's been filtered and whatnot. But what's nice about traditional gathering and preparations of salts is that you get all of that local feel for things that it could be 20 different things that are in there that really affect the flavor of things, which is kind of neat.
And Dave, are we seeing more indigenous chefs incorporate indigenous salt? And, you know, what do you think about that?
I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing to support all of our brothers and sisters that are kind of in the food business and are trying to make a living from selling traditional things or trading traditional things, keeping traditions alive. I think salt is probably one of those harder things to keep alive because it's so easy to mass produce for a lot of folks and the pricing differences can be different. But I don't really use any commercially produced salts, hardly ever. So most of my stuff is hand harvested or it's dug or it's some type of specialty salt. So I would be a firm believer in supporting anyone that's taking that on again. Trying to keep those traditions alive because, it's all of our traditions are important and we've lost a lot of our food ways, but I think it'd be nice. This is a pretty simplistic way to keep one of our food ways going that's crucial to our existence. So I would wholeheartedly support the use of folks, Native folks, selling and making salt again. And salt's a great thing to blend as well. So there's some of us out there that are doing quite a bit of that already.
Well, maybe somebody out there, somebody out there listening is doing some of that. You want to tell us about it? You can always email us comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And we are getting close to the end of the hour. And Moises, anything you want to leave us with when you think about salt, indigenous people, go ahead.
I just think that the importance of salt is the connection and the relationships between these stories. I think, you know, when I go out to that area and gather my salt, I think a lot about, you know, just how this is a connection, and it binds people to the land, to each other. And it's an important thing to do. I think I'm not for the sale of salt because it's not the way it's done. I think it's okay to trade salt. And I think it's okay to give salt, like what was mentioned in Hawaii. And I think through that, young folks, it's not easy. It's in the hot desert, and it's hard to gather, and it's not easy work. But we got to keep this alive.
Thank you for that, Moises. Let's go ahead and bring back Kule Naisoa Santos. And Kule, anything you want to just pick up on? I know we heard a lot, and you got to hear about gathering traditions beyond Hawaii. Anything you want to share?
It's really interesting and cool to hear everyone else talk about it and how important it is for everyone's culture and how similar it all is, you know, as the way we make it and our and the history we have here and the legends we have here compared to others so far away, and the value of it that we all feel about it and how it brings us back to our roots.
And Kule, anything you want to share? Because sometimes we have young listeners to open your ears, open your eyes when you are being given that opportunity to learn how to harvest salt. Any words to our younger generation? Kule?
I think that for me, I had a choice growing up, and my children didn't. And I don't know what's the right way, but I think that when you keep talking about it and when you keep educating and when you make it important to you, your home is bigger than your house. And so you have to create that fire in your children for them to understand how important it is for that to continue on. And the things, you know, I get, like, say, for example, selling it. It's important to me, to my family, that we continue not to. Hawaii is expensive. It's expensive to live here, but it's something that is still shouldn't be sold in our section. So things like that, I think that it's just, you know, to get children interested in hard work is complicated, but the more passion you put in it and the more you make it not an option, I think that helps. And yeah.
Well, very nice. And Kule, thank you for being here with us. And you know what? We're going to wrap things up here, but really appreciate all the knowledge that was shared and maybe even the knowledge that will still come in based on whatever this conversation has sparked up in your own community. Again, if you want to share some thoughts with us, you can always find us comments@nativeamericacalling.com. You can also comment directly on our website. And if you want to find us on Twitter, we're at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we're also on Instagram. And if you wanted to share this program with somebody or let them know about the conversation, you can tell them that they can find it on our website and also as a podcast on different places. Of course, places like iTunes and SoundCloud, you'll find this conversation. That's going to do it for our program today. We really appreciate you starting your week off with us, tuning in to hear what Indigenous people are thinking, saying, and doing. We'll do more of that all week long. And if you'd like to see the details of everybody who's going to be joining us, you can always find it on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. Thank you to everybody we heard from, Moises Gonzalez, David Smoke McCluskey, and also Kule Naisoa Santos. I'm Tara Gatewood. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
Smoking gave me COPD, which makes it harder and harder for me to breathe. I have a tip for you. If your doctor gives you 5 years to live, spend it talking with your grandchildren. Explain to them that your grandpa's not going to be around anymore to share his wisdom and his love. I haven't figured out how to do that yet. I'm running out of time.
COPD makes it harder and harder to breathe and can cause death. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Skuktash, IHS, Autumn Homach Gum Chiskikik, Autumn Kokotum Hakik, Osihas Uri Chinukut Gum Dwakak, Homo of Gupiokchamataboy Muam, A boy Hagugut Umamaka Mobum Miakcham by Joyce Mai, Omoi Hachuchka on healthcare.gov, Omoi Hagugut on Homako, Gigik Sikor Sikor, Waik Homako, Gigik, Gokutas Pomot Pjud, Edop Amjit Himak Centers for Medicare to Medicaid Hachipkan.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.